The last case for today is U.S. versus Elam. Ms. Roberts.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court,
Mr. Porter,
Ms. Garvey. In August of 2002, following a three-day bench trial, the appellant William Elam was found guilty of all three counts in the indictment by the district court, and this case is before the court only on two sentencing issues that we raise: whether the district court erred, which we believe it did, in failing to take into consideration certain medical records which we obtained and submitted to the court as a supplemental exhibit in support of our supplemental position paper and objections to the PSI, and whether the court erred, which we think it did, in enhancing under 3C1.1 for obstruction of justice based upon a witness who trial counsel called at the preliminary hearing. And who we don't dispute testified in a fashion that was contrary to an earlier statement that he had made.
Mr. Roberts, forgive me, but before you get any further, I want to know what the difference in the sentences would have been if Judge Hibbler had credited Elam's estimate of the drug quantity, in other words, the 8.3 kilograms over the PSR's 18 kilograms.
If the district court had adopted our position, which we espoused as the way we calculated, it would have been 8.3 kilograms, it would have put him on a level 34, and if the court had...
And that range would be what, Ms. Roberts?
235 to 293. We're really looking at a 10-year difference. Mr. Elam got a 360-month sentence, 30 years. His co-defendants, if you will, I believe one of them was charged in the indictment, one was not. His source and a supplier to him for his source's girlfriend, both testified against him. One of them, at least at the time we wrote our reply, has not been sentenced, but had a free fall agreement with the government, and the other, the main supplier, got 60 months when she was sentenced. Mr. Elam, in large part because of his criminal history, he is a criminal history category 5, got 360 months, 30 years. He would have got, I believe, a 20-year sentence, but still a very weighty sentence, had the court adopted our position on both of the issues which we brought before the court. What I really believe the government has missed here is that you have to view the two issues that we raised in the context of Mr. Elam's request for new counsel. That's not raised as an issue before the court or whether that counsel was effective. As we pointed out, you know, we believe it's too early to have raised that, and certainly intend to continue to represent Mr. Elam back in the district court on that issue. But it arose this way. Mr. Elam was charged originally in January of 2002 in a criminal complaint, indicted in March of 2002, and not until a year later, and he had an appointed lawyer in the district court, but a year later, on March 26, 2003, when the only critical stage of the proceeding left was the actual sentencing hearing, we got a call informing us that we had been appointed as substitute counsel. Now, I was confused as to knowing that pretrial choices had been made, the choice to waive a jury trial had been made, he'd already gone to trial, the PSR had been prepared, objections had been prepared and filed. You know, what was the district court looking for us to do other than, you know, with all due respect to the district court, just be a warm body at the sentencing. Why was the court substituting counsel at that moment? And we were unaware that Mr. Elam had twice before raised the issue, perhaps inartfully, and on one occasion having waived it or given it up on questioning by the court, but that it was what had already been raised, that it was a thread that ran through this case. And we think the two sentencing issues that we've raised need to be viewed in that context. The government's responsive brief doesn't even comment on that issue. You know, the medical records were in the possession of Mr. Elam's girlfriend by the time we were appointed. It didn't take much to get them. I don't know what the explanation was as to why trial counsel chose not to obtain them, not to use them, either to cross-examine the government's witness, Christine Williams, who equivocated three times, my recollection is, over when she began supplying Mr. Elam with the PCP, which he was charged with distributing. But trial counsel didn't obtain those records, did not submit them as an exhibit for the sentencing. Yet when we submitted them as an exhibit for the sentencing, the court told us basically that it was too late, that they could have been used to cross-examine Ms. Williams, but now that it was too late. The government argues, well, there was plenty of evidence for the court to find 18 or 19 kilograms, which it did. And that's true. But the argument that we've raised really is that the court was obligated to at least look at these medical records and take them into account at that point in time.
Don't you think that that Judge Hibbler did take them into account, in that it would certainly seem that he believed he was dealing while he was in the hospital?
Well, yes and no. I mean, if you read Judge Hibbler's comments, and the government says, well, it's clear that he did. And I say, well, it's just not so clear at all. And I can tell you, I think he did not, based on his comment that when he says it's a sort of an after-the-fact fact, nobody asked the witness that question, implying that that's when it should have been asked. That's when it should have been brought to the court's attention so that the court today, at the day of sentencing, could have made a determination. And that now it's too late. Yes, can the government stand up here and argue, well, this court should read Judge Hibbler's comment that he did take it into account? I say it's not clear, and I say he had an obligation to do that. As to the obstruction count, I think that what the court said was, well, we think common sense is that Mr. Elam was behind Mr. Boyd's testimony. And the government argues, really, that it's the only logical inference. I think that's exact, and that's not the legal standard. It's by preponderance. There must be evidence upon which the court rests its decision to enhance or obstruction. And the evidence was produced by the government itself, which was Mr. Boyd's statement that said there was word on the street, people on the street, it might have been Elam's relative, but there was nothing that either the court could point to or that the government could point to that lays this at the feet of the defendant, who was in custody the whole time. It's not like he was out. And they did not, and therefore I think the court was wrong to impose the obstruction. In light of that, the court should have, we believe, found Mr. Elam to have a level 34 in a range of 235 to 293.
Thank you, Ms. Porter. Porter?
Your Honors, good morning.
the first issue counsel raises and styles that the court failed to take into consideration medical records. That's how she styles the issue. And perhaps one of the problems is that in the defendant's briefing, the citation to the court's opinion is very abbreviated and doesn't mention the last two paragraphs of his statement about the evidence of drug quantity, which is, as you well know, is considered on a clear error standard. The court considered the evidence and rejected the evidence, plain and simple. What we've got here and what the court explains is that there's no doubt that he was hospitalized for a period of time at the very beginning of the conspiracy. That's the time period we're talking about here. He concluded, after hearing the evidence and in finding the defendant guilty, that the conspiracy began in approximately June of 2000. We're now at sentencing, and the issue is drug quantity, 10 to 30 kilos or something less than that. And what he finds at sentencing is that, hey, maybe there's some degree of ambivalence in terms of the exact date of the conspiracy, but the defendant put forth an argument that this conspiracy couldn't have started before approximately June of 2001, and Ms. Williams just got her dates wrong. And what the court found, based on overwhelming evidence, Title III intercepted calls, consensual calls set up by Ms. Williams when she's trying to essentially ensnare the defendant, and they're talking about their historical relationship. Her testimony, which he found to be credible, which he heard as the fact finder, all of that evidence points to a very lengthy period of time in which they're dealing. So he considered the hospital records, but frankly, what's going on here is sort of a nibbling at the edges of what the evidence is. Did the conspiracy start in June of 2000 or July of 2000? I think what Judge Hibbler is saying here is, as Your Honor, Judge Rovner recognizes, is that he may very well have been conducting his drug operation while going in and out of the hospital. Or maybe he was starting in July, but it doesn't change the rock-solid evidence of a lengthy multi-year conspiracy between this defendant and Ms. Williams. And on the issue of, well, counsel didn't do this, counsel didn't do that, of course that's not before us, but this counsel at this sentencing hearing could have done other things, could have called the defendant to the stand to talk about these medical records, could have subpoenaed Ms. Williams if they thought that there was any mileage in going at this argument. The judge didn't commit clear error. The judge didn't commit error at all. The evidence, frankly, is overwhelming. It's not a preponderance of the evidence. It's overwhelming that they had a multi-year drug conspiracy. In terms of the obstruction, again, what is the evidence? And did the judge commit clear error? The evidence isn't simply Mr. Boyd's post-arrest statement in which he said that the relatives, through Mr. Boyd, had told him about the court hearing. That's not the only evidence, but that is some of the evidence that the court had in front of it. The evidence is that Mr. Boyd testified falsely at a probable cause hearing, and he was called to the stand not by the government, but called to the stand by the defendant. If the defendant, that's evidence. That is considered, can be considered, was considered by Judge Hibbler. If Mr. Elam had nothing to do with this, if Mr. Elam didn't know about this, wasn't aware, wasn't directing the testimony, he could have said, hey, let's not call him. What are we doing here? He's gonna sink me. He didn't do any of that. Of course, he calls him to the stand. He testifies falsely. He testifies falsely on a very material fact, who sent him to pick up the drugs, and Judge Hibbler found accordingly. I think that's it, Your Honors. I would ask that you affirm Judge Hibbler's decision and affirm in all respects the sentence of Mr. Elam. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. You have 1 minute, Mr. Roberts.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that it was May 24th, 2000. Mr. Elam was hospitalized for the first time as a result of 5 gunshot wounds. Entered in various parts of his body. That resulted in a colostomy. He was rehospitalized twice following that for infection. So for the government to suggest that he was still dealing drugs out on the street really doesn't look at what the medical condition was or that he was rehospitalized twice for a very serious condition. One of the bullets pierced his lower intestine. One pierced his pelvic area. The Title III's that they refer to that say support this don't begin until November of 2001. So they're sort of reading back in time once again to the summertime. And they also glance over the fact that Ms. Williams herself gave 3 different starting points in her testimony as to when she began dealing with Mr. Elam. And as to the second issue, I would just want to point out that Mr. Boyd's statement submitted by the government in sentencing and as part of the record in this case, his handwritten statement says, and I'm quoting, "I lied because everyone on the street was saying I was tricking and telling on people, including Elam." He doesn't mean including Elam was saying that. "I was tricking on people, including Elam. I let my pride cloud my judgment, and I lied so that people would stop saying I was tricking." There is no evidence that linked that with Mr. Elam, and the district court was wrong in relying solely upon its common sense or no other logical inference. The government has an obligation to produce some proof. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harper.
Thank you
for taking the appointment in this case, too, and representing your clients vigorously. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.